You're listening to Talk It Out, LGBTQ Voices in a Queer Election Year, presented by Gay City News and GayCityNews.com. I'm your host, Paul Schindler. Welcome to the 18th episode of Talk It Out. This week, we take a look at Texas, a state long seen as a Republican stronghold. But this year, Texas is worth watching because of the potential vulnerability of two-term Senator Ted Cruz, who is facing a spirited challenge from Dallas area Democratic Congressman Colin Allred, a former NFL linebacker and civil rights attorney. Cruz breezed to his first Senate victory in 2012 with a 16-point margin over his Democratic opponent. 6 years ago, Beto O'Rourke trimmed Cruz's victory margin to just 2.5 points. Recent polling in the Cruz-Allred contest has ranged from giving Cruz a 4-point advantage to showing Allred up by one. It's not just Democrats who see Allred as having a shot at toppling Cruz. Several weeks ago, Chris LaCivita, Donald Trump's senior campaign advisor, took to X to lament, "What the hell is wrong with the Senate race in Texas?" And since then, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee has announced plans for a multi-million dollar spend in support of Allred. Despite its reputation as a deep red stronghold, Democrats have shown clear signs of growing strength in Texas in recent years. In 2012, Mitt Romney won a commanding 16-point win over Barack Obama there. 4 years later, Trump bested Hillary Clinton by 9%, and Joe Biden narrowed that gap to 5.5 points. Recent polling in the presidential contest in Texas has shown Trump up over Kamala Harris by roughly 6 points. Today, I will be speaking to Jonathan Gooch, Communications Director at Equality Texas, that state's LGBTQ rights group. Equality Texas has faced tremendous odds in recent years against the Republican-controlled executive and legislative branches of state government in Austin, which have pursued increasingly hostile and radical anti-LGBTQ agendas. Agendas out of step, however, with public opinion in the state. Equality Texas works with volunteers across the state and in partnership with allied groups such as Planned Parenthood to stave off some of the worst that the state GOP has tried to throw at them. My guest today is Jonathan Gooch, who is the communications director at Equality Texas, that state's LGBTQ civil rights organization. Equality Texas grew out of organizing that began in Texas back in the 1980s. Jonathan is here today to discuss the current status of the LGBTQ equality fight in Texas, to detail what his group is doing this year to mobilize voters during a critical presidential contest, as well as a hotly contested U.S. Senate race, and to reflect on what Equality Texas is hearing from LGBTQ and allied voters this election season. Welcome to the podcast, Jonathan.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Jonathan, I'd like to first catch up our listeners on what Equality Texas has been facing from far-right Republicans in the governor's office, lieutenant governor's office, and in the legislature. The legislature only meets every other year in odd-numbered years, so your most recent legislative session came in the first half of 2023. And in that session, there were some bad anti-LGBTQ measures adopted, but other proposals that were not enacted. Can you describe what anti-LGBTQ measures were enacted and what attacks you were able to block?
Yeah, that's a great question. People in Texas, especially the queer community, have had a rough few years. If we go all the way back to 2021, in that legislative session, we had 76 anti-LGBTQ bills, which is an astronomical number to begin with. But in 2023, that number more than doubled. And we were facing over 140 anti-LGBTQ bills, bills that ran the gamut of banning healthcare for transgender youth, censoring what people are allowed to say in classrooms, and essentially burning books that should be available to young people in public schools. So most of those in this last session, we were able to hold off, but there were seven bills that got through. Those include shutting down DEI offices at public universities, banning care for transgender youth here in the state of Texas, a book censorship bill, a drag ban, and a whole host of things. There's so many, it's hard to keep track of sometimes. But I think what's most important to realize is that most of those have been shut down by the courts. The drag ban is no longer legal. That court case is still ongoing, but same with the book ban. That was ruled unconstitutional. So fortunately, our democracy is working pretty effectively. Even though there were some malicious lawmakers who wanted to target the queer community, the courts and the constitution of both the state of Texas and the United States of America have shielded queer Texans from a lot. But that doesn't mean that we're not still dealing with a lot. Young people in the state of Texas who need gender-affirming care are forced to travel hours and hours to get care out of state. Texas is a massive state. So driving to the border to get healthcare is not a simple process. And that is honestly so cumbersome, but also it's prohibitive for a lot of people because they can't afford to spend the time and the money to do that.
And that would often involve actually air travel as opposed to getting in your car and driving, right?
Yeah, it depends on what people can afford and where they found doctors. So you're absolutely right. A lot of people are flying to the Pacific Northwest or to other states where there are shelter laws that protect that type of care for young people. But it's just so time consuming and so expensive, especially when you think about the fact that much of the time, these are just regular checkups. These are just checkups about, you know, how's your progress doing? You know, your hormone prescription, really simple things, maybe your puberty blocker prescription, things that really shouldn't be that complicated.
My understanding is that there was an effort to pass a bill like the one in Florida that has been dubbed Don't Say Gay,
yes,
and that failed in the legislature. Is that correct?
That is correct. Despite all of the anti-LGBTQ laws we have on the books, we do not have a Don't Say Gay policy. It is worth adding a little context because we did pass HB 900, which is a bill that has really strict rules about what books are allowed to be in libraries. And it has this grading system about sexually explicit and sexually relevant content. Unfortunately, that type of language has been used to remove books about human sexuality, books about queerness, stories about queer people, rather than actually protecting young people from highly sexualized content. Also, in addition to that, I think it's important to note that there is an aggressively funded, I'm loath to say grassroots movement, because I don't think that's really what's happening. But there are groups in the state of Texas that are targeting school boards across the state, introducing anti-trans policies in the school that are trying to do their own academic censorship in different local areas. And so that's been a very big threat that we've been facing here in Texas as well. And the reason I say I don't think that's grassroots is because consistently when we show up to those events, 80 to 90% of the people that speak are there to support the queer community. And it's usually just one or two people that are very angry and have a lot to say, and they make a loud noise, but they don't reflect the values of the whole community.
But that keeps you having to travel district to district in Texas, as opposed to focusing only on making sure bad things don't happen in Austin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, logistically, it's a huge challenge. We're not a huge team. We have about 15 people, and we only have 4 on our field team. So when we're talking about mobilizing people to show up in those districts, it is taxing on our team. But thankfully, we have a huge network of volunteers and community members who are deeply invested here in the state of Texas.
So when I think about what is going on in the radicalization of the Republican Party in Texas on LGBTQ issues, what is surprising is that by a number of measures, Democrats in Texas are becoming stronger. And so it would seem as though the Republicans in the legislature are increasingly out of step with public opinion in Texas. Is the cause of that the fact that there are primaries in which a Republican cannot go wrong by being too conservative?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Texas is one of the most gerrymandered states. I live in San Antonio. San Antonio is a very progressive city. Every district in San Antonio is this weird, peculiar shape that's trying to catch people from different, you know, the packing and the cracking. So I think you've hit it on the head when you're looking at gerrymandered districts. The real competition is in the primaries. And so the legislature has created districts that are reliably conservative, reliably Republican, and then they've packed a few reliably Democratic districts. And so when you're vying for primary voters, it's a very different race. Primary voters tend to be more radical, more extreme, and it's a very low turnout. We already have low turnout in Texas, but much lower turnout in primaries, which means a very small group of very radical people are actually deciding who ends up in office. But I think we have found ways to use that to our advantage as well. In some of the primaries where we have had Democrats who are not supportive and who have abandoned the queer community, we have been able to push them out through a grassroots movement where LGBTQ people have shown up and told their neighbors how their lawmaker was voting and how it harmed the community.
Yeah, and that's really the flip side of this primary election problem, which is that with pro-equality opinion so strong in the Democratic Party, when a Democrat takes an anti-LGBTQ position, for example, they will face a cost in a primary. There was a May primary runoff election that you and I chatted about yesterday briefly, where a Democratic member of the State House of Representatives from a solidly blue district in Houston, her name was Sean Theory, was defeated by a labor organizer, Lauren Ashley Simmons. Talk to us about that contest and the work that Equality Texas did in mobilizing voters in that district.
Yeah. So Sean Theory, for background for people who don't know, is a Democrat who at one point had our endorsement. We were very excited to work with her in the legislature. But in 2023, she made a dramatic U-turn. She started taking meetings with anti-trans groups and then stood up on the floor and gave a very long speech, spewing a lot of anti-trans rhetoric, and ultimately voted to ban healthcare for transgender youth. Obviously, that was deeply upsetting to the community and to her district. Equality Texas invested a lot of time in making sure we had a pro-LGBTQ representative in that district. We sent over 20,000 texts, nearly 10,000 mailers, and knocked on over 3,000 doors. And that work really had a profound impact. The regular primary election, which was so close that they had to have a runoff. And so I think that really goes to show how mobilization and that community effort really can turn things around, because those elections were decided by a very few number of votes. And just knocking on your neighbor's door can sometimes be the key to changing that outcome.
So a few weeks ago, the Texas Tribune reported on plans by Senator Ted Cruz who is facing a tough reelection battle with a Democratic congressman from the Dallas area, Colin Allred. Cruz planning to spend roughly $6 million in anti-trans advertising against Allred. The Tribune also reported that the National Republican Congressional Committee is planning on spending big money in a similar way to target Democratic Congressman Vicente Gonzalez, who represents a portion of the Gulf Coast. Tell us what that advertising looks like and how is Equality Texas responding to that?
Yeah, that advertising is terrible. I am actually reluctant to describe it in detail, other than to say that it is anti-trans, it is despicable, and just layers of untruths. It's truly disgusting work. When it comes to, I think it's worth noting here that I think Ted Cruz is taking a risk on this because as you said before, Texas lawmakers are out of step with the population. And we know that's true because we know that from the Public Religion Research Institute that 71% of Texans support non-discrimination protections for their LGBTQ neighbors. Right? That's people who want the law to guarantee protection for queer people. And I think it would look so different if that's the way our lawmakers, if that's the way our elected representatives like Ted Cruz were voting. Obviously, that is not what Ted Cruz is doing. But when it comes to what we're doing, we're working on the ground to make sure people understand simple things like what it means to be trans and just really basic education for people that maybe don't know a trans person or don't realize that they know a trans person. And part of our push, we're actually partnering with GLAAD and Ground to push some ads out that just introduce people to trans people across the country, just telling their stories. And it's so powerful for people just to meet someone, even if it's just a story. If someone's just telling you who they are on the screen, that introduction can be so powerful, as we've seen with the historical queer movement, right? The push to come out was so important in order for everyone to realize that they know a gay person, they know a lesbian. And now that trans people are in the crosshairs of lawmakers, it's really important that the public be introduced to trans people.
The Tribune article noted that a very high proportion of Texans responded that to some recent poll that they personally don't know a trans person. And so what you're talking about there is really putting a human face on an issue that for many, many people has been abstract and demagogued.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Having that human face is so important. And there are multiple ways to do that. Obviously, social media and traditional media are great ways to send those messages far and wide. But going back to what we talked about before, block walking, knocking on someone's door is a really powerful way. And I am so impressed by the trans advocates in the state who have been willing to have these very patient conversations with people who have good intentions but don't really understand, you know, what issues are facing trans people in Texas today. And I think, you know, obviously it's a mixed bag when you go door to door, but I think that's one of the things we always learn from block walking is how many people truly have good intentions and just don't have the right information.
So you're talking there about transgender activists themselves doing some of that door knocking.
Absolutely. Which is, I just want to be candid about the fact that that is a tremendous burden for trans people to take on. And it is powerful to see the people that choose to do that walking door to door in a state that has such hateful policies, but they know that their neighbors themselves are good people.
Right. In terms of the perception of a potential risk from doing that.
Right. Right. And I think that brings us to another issue that we are facing in the state of Texas, is that with this heightened anti-trans rhetoric, there have been vigilantes that have taken it upon themselves to be hateful. Hate crimes against trans people are escalating in the state. So whenever we do these types of block walks or whenever we show up to the Capitol to do a rally or a march, we always have a safety plan, which is something we haven't had to really do in the past. But we've been really fortunate to have groups like Vets for Equality, who provide de-escalation and security for our events. But it's a strange time to be politically active in Texas.
The Texas Tribune article that I mentioned, and you were quoted in that article seemed to suggest that one of the reasons that Cruz was making this major investment in anti-trans rhetoric and advertising was that his economic and immigration appeals in the campaign were proving not to be enough. And I think that speaks to your point about this being a potentially risky strategy for Cruz, and it might be, in fact, a strategy of last resort that he's turning to. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It is a strategy of last resort. I think it's worth noting that just a couple of years ago, Ted Cruz said that Texas should repeal the sodomy law, which is technically on the books. It was famously overturned in the Supreme Court case, Lawrence v. Texas. You know, so erasing it from the books doesn't really do anything, but it's symbolic. And so it is interesting to see people as extreme as Ted Cruz saying something like that, and then turning around trying to obliterate the trans community. And I think you are right about his other policies. Ted Cruz is incredibly unpopular in the state of Texas. He is more unpopular than he is popular, which is not terribly uncommon of politicians, but it is somewhat surprising to think that he keeps getting elected with those kinds of numbers. And it's not the first time he's been seriously threatened. With Beto O'Rourke, he won by a very slim margin, about 200,000 votes. And the state of Texas has changed even since that election. So I think he is taking some risks here because he's nervous about losing his seat. And I think the significant investment in these ads, right? $6 million is a lot of money to spend. And spending that kind of money shows that you're scared. And I think we're also seeing even the Democratic Party invest some more money in this race, which shows that even they think it's a little more competitive than it has been in the past.
So you talked about the work you did in the Democratic primary back in the spring. You talked about the work that trans advocates are doing in terms of this advertising from the Cruz campaign. Can you tell us more generally what your voter mobilization efforts look like this year?
Yeah. So we try to be intentional with the races we target. And in general, we're focused on state level advocacy. A lot of the work we do is focused on ledge, and we want to think about the composition of the lawmakers under the dome. So we have a few races we're focusing on that are competitive, and we want to be sure that LGBTQ supporters are in those seats. So whenever we support a candidate, we like to do everything we can. Our endorsements will be coming out shortly. We've endorsed a variety of candidates. We also block walk. We mobilize in the community where they're from, right? And that's while our staff is stretched out across the state, we're not bringing people into those districts. We're reaching out to people within those districts, partnering with local groups in order to have local people speaking to their neighbors about why they're voting for a pro-LGBTQ candidate. We have also sent out mailers, and we will continue to do that, mailers and texts. And in the past, we've even hosted tailored websites that contrast the policy positions of the two candidates.
Are your endorsements exclusively in state races, or do you also make endorsements in federal races?
It depends a little bit. We've not been consistent with that, but I do know that our board is the one that votes on those endorsements. Our board is convening in just a couple of weeks to make some decisions about national races.
You're not barred in any way from making endorsements in federal races.
No.
Right. And when you talk about partnering with groups on the ground, are those both LGBTQ and allied groups?
Yeah. For example, in the race we were talking about earlier, Lauren Ashley Simmons versus Sean Theory. We worked with a lot of local unions, the AFL-CIO, a lot of different groups came out and worked together to get Lauren elected. It was really powerful to see so many people coming together across issue areas in one common mission.
So you mentioned drawing on your local supporters across Texas, whether it's in election campaigns or whether you face a challenge in a school board. How does your organization go about leveraging volunteer support? What does that process look like?
We're across the state all the time. Our small field team does a lot of work. So during Pride is one time when we recruit a lot of people, we get a lot of email signups and start to meet people in the community who are invested in queer rights. So this year we have done something like 80 different Pride celebrations across the state. And in Texas, Pride celebrations are not only in June because it's 100 plus degrees in June here. In fact, my hometown just had their little Pride celebration recently. So those are still going on in September and October. But that's one of the ways we meet people in the community. We do also partner with a lot of local groups. Our field director has been organizing for something like 20 years now. So she is very well connected across the state. She knows a lot of people. And when we reach out to people, we're able to also tap into other constituencies where there are intersectional identities and different issues that all sort of converge. One of the groups that we work with, that we're really proud to work with, is OLTT. And you'll have to forgive me. I can't remember what it stands for. It's in Spanish, and my Spanish is a little rusty.
Okay.
But a group that focuses on providing help and support to undocumented trans immigrants, which is a really powerful thing in the state of Texas, where we have such a huge immigrant population. Here in San Antonio, we've partnered with the Esperanza Center, which again provides Spanish language programming, which is really important in a state that is majority minority, at a state where 30% of our population speak Spanish at home. So because we're so diverse, we have to be in the communities in order to have a real impact, because every community is different. Every community has its own concerns. It's really masterful what our field director, Sofia Sepulveda, has been able to do.
Do your efforts include voter registration campaigns as well?
Yeah.
And what have those looked like this year?
We do also, as you say, register people to vote. So I'm sure this varies state to state quite a bit. In the state of Texas, you have to go through a little program to be a deputy voter registrar, and that is on a county by county basis. So it's cumbersome, but all of our field employees are deputy voter registrars. We make sure to have these events in key districts, right? In the districts where we're pushing a candidate, we want to make sure that we're getting people registered to vote. And we also uplift and support different voter registration efforts that partner groups like Planned Parenthood Texas Votes, that's the 501c4 arm of Planned Parenthood here in Texas, supporting those types of efforts across other issue areas, because we all want people to vote. And in a state with such low voter turnout, it's really important that we do whatever we can to simplify that. And that said, voting is getting harder and harder in Texas, and our attorney general is on a campaign to intimidate people. They've been removing a lot of people from the rolls. So I think it is important for people in Texas to be aware of whether or not they are currently registered to vote. And that's part of what we're doing as well, educating people through our social media channels about what's been going on and how to check their voter status so that they know whether or not they need to register before this upcoming election.
So it sounds like your registration efforts are localized because of the county regulations. And it also sounds like in some cases, you're partnering with other groups on those campaigns. So this may be a question you don't have an answer at your fingertips, but do you have a notion about the number of registrations you've been able to put in place?
That is a great question. I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. What are you hearing when you speak to people in the community at these pride events, in registration efforts, just in the ordinary course of your business, what are you hearing from the LGBTQ community this election season about their biggest concerns?
Yeah. I mean, I think the concerns of the LGBTQ community are not that different than the concerns of most people, right? I think most of us are concerned about the grocery bill, about rising rents, about limited housing. I think in Texas, there are additional concerns. And I think for queer people in Texas, safety has emerged as a real concern. Recently, the Texas Attorney General pressured the Department of Public Safety into preventing trans people from updating their gender markers on their driver's license, which has a lot of implications, including voting in a state where a voter ID is required, or any ID, a picture ID is required to vote. And it additionally opens up another batch of safety concerns. If a trans person is pulled over by a police officer who might not have the right training and their gender marker doesn't align with their gender expression, that could put them in harm's way. That could be a very frightening situation for someone. And so I think all of those concerns are really compounded, especially when we've seen a dramatic increase in the number of hate groups in Texas, specifically in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. The Southern Poverty Law Center's tracking of hate groups has spiked in that region. And a lot of them are neo-Nazis, very openly carrying swastikas and all these other symbols, protesting queer-affirming churches, drag events. And so I think a lot of queer people in the state of Texas have been increasingly concerned about their safety. So I think that's a very real issue that people are thinking about when they're thinking about the legislative session. And I know that the community as a whole would love to see statewide non-discrimination protections, because we just don't have those. And we need something in order to protect us. And of course, the Equality Act is something we also need on the federal level.
You mentioned that your state legislative strategy is very important. You look at the election beyond those races and the U.S. Senate and the presidential contest. Are there other contests in Texas this year that loom particularly large in your view?
Yeah, again, so much of this is very local. I think it's really important for people to be plugged into their local school boards, because there's such a push for anti-trans policies at the local level. Who you have on the school board can make a huge difference. Unfortunately, our organization doesn't have the bandwidth to comb through the school board elections across the state, but we do have a candidate directory where people who are interested in pledging their support for the LGBTQ community and identifying as queer or an ally can do so on our website. And that is a way that we can uplift queer affirming people at the local level.
Are you willing to make prognostication 5.5 weeks out as to where Texas voters are going to end up in the Senate or the presidential contest?
I'm afraid I cannot. As much as I wish my witchcraft were powerful enough, I cannot see into the future. And I think it is worth watching, though. And I think everything we're seeing is that it's very close. It's certainly not foretold, which is important to note, right? I think we've seen such a competitive race between Colin Allred and Ted Cruz. Just a week or two ago, Allred was ahead in a poll, which is not inconsistent with the way Beto and Cruz were polling in the previous elections. I think it's very fascinating that it is impossible to say, because in a state where things have been so red for so long, I think in some way people are excited to see the possibility of change. And I think it's also worth noting that in the last presidential election, Biden only lost by 600,000 votes. And in a state with 30 million people, and significantly more than 600,000 have moved to the state since the last election. So the demographics are changing. Everything is changing in Texas. I think it'll be a race to watch for sure. I hope to see an outcome that's different than what we've seen in the past.
Biden narrowed that gap considerably from the level at which Hillary Clinton lost the state. I also saw an article yesterday, I think it was in the Austin Statesman, that reviewed the polling in the Senate race. And it certainly seemed as though that one-point lead for Allred was not simply an outlier one-off, that there clearly are consistent, very close polls between Cruz and Allred. That was my take on it.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. More often than not, those polls seem to be within or at least very close to the margin of error. It seems like a toss-up.
So for folks who are listening from Texas to this podcast, or folks from outside of Texas who might have an interest in pitching in one way or another with the work that your group is doing, what opportunities are there and what's the best way for them to connect with those opportunities?
Well, we're a small org, and I'm proud of the outsized impact we have, but the hard truth of it is that money goes a long way. Money to pay for those mailers, to pay for any type of outreach, to pay for our staff, all of that is so important. So if you go to equalitytexas.org and donate, that makes a big impact. But for people who want to donate their time, there are also lots of ways to plug in, whether you're here in the state or elsewhere. There is a volunteer sign-up sheet on our website where you can select the types of things you're interested in. So if you are in another state, but you want to help with a texting campaign, you can select texting. And those types of things really make a big difference because they do alleviate the pressure on our staff, right? If someone can help send 1,000 texts, then our staff can spend that hour doing something else. And that's really important when we're trying to stretch our funds as far as they will go.
In terms of social media platforms, which ones are you active on?
We're on everything.
You're on everything.
We're on Twitter at Equality Texas. We're on Instagram at Equality Texas. You can find us on Facebook. We're also on TikTok. So follow us.
Terrific. Jonathan Gooch, Communications Director at Equality Texas. Thanks so much for joining the podcast.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Thanks again to Jonathan Gooch, Communications Director at Equality Texas. And thanks to all of you for joining me again this week. For more information about Equality Texas or to volunteer to help in its efforts, visit equalitytexas.org. You can follow Equality Texas on Facebook, Instagram, X, and TikTok. Next Wednesday, October 9th, I welcome back Professor Patrick Egan, a political scientist at New York University, who will help me make sense of what we are seeing in the blizzard of polls coming out about the presidential contest, both nationwide and in critical swing states. If you've not done so already, please subscribe now to Talk It Out, LGBTQ Voices in a Queer Election Year, available on Apple, Spotify, and other podcast platforms.